I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wonderful time of the year. It is the fourth annual AFC preview show. And for the fourth annual show, for the first time ever, we have all corners of the AFC East represented for this podcast. But before we get started, I wouldn't be remiss if we didn't send our best wishes out to the family of Wyndham Rotunda, formerly known as Bray Wyatt, as obviously people know. Look, this is a football podcast, but the W in YWC stands for wrestling, so rest in peace to Bray Wyatt. So I just wanted to throw that one out there. But anyway, guys, without further ado, we're going to shift to the podcast now. Introducing first, you know him, Dan Goes Ham. Danny, welcome to the show, man, episode number 240, followed by the man who knows the cat better than anyone else I see on Twitter, and Bills fanatic Greg Thompson. And last but not least, the man hoping that his team gets Jonathan Taylor tomorrow, Big Rat 310 in his DVOA. Gentlemen, this is 240th episode of YWC Football Talk. I'm ready to talk some football. How about the rest of you guys?
That's right. Football is back.
Hello, hello. Finally have a seat at the table here.
Happy for real football. No more fake football. Mm. Let's get the real football.
It's like all those like hot takes we had to like listen through throughout the whole offseason and all that stuff. It's just gone and in a window. It's in a window of the past. And before we get into it, obviously we're going to save the AFCs for last, save the best for last, let all four of us banter about our teams. Quickly, I just want to jump on the AFC South and see, not so much more if we have a team that we think that's going to win, because I think we're all in agreement of who's going to win, but do you think there's any teams that could potentially be like making noise in the sense of they win a few games here or there that no one expects? Because I have one team in mind who I feel like is a caterpillar that could soon be a butterfly, maybe in like 2 to 3 years from now. Whoever wants to take the floor can go right ahead.
I think people are writing off the Titans a little early. You know, that defense is still very good. You know, they still have, Tannehill's played well in the league. He's proven. So I don't think they're going to be horrible like people are thinking. And the Jaguars aren't going to just run away with the division.
I think you're spot on. I think that Danny picked the right team. I think that D'Amico Ryans is real. I think he's going to build something legit in Houston. It's not going to be this year. No. I think that obviously there's some weird stuff going on in Indy, and I am a fan of Anthony Richardson. I think that could turn into a real thing. Also not going to be this year. I think the smart money is still on Jacksonville. I believe in Trevor Lawrence. There's a lot of talent down there. Especially for him to distribute the ball to. So I don't know that I would pick Tennessee, but I also don't think Jacksonville is as prohibitive of a favorite as they're being shown as. I think that's closer between those two than what they are. I think I would still pick Jacksonville, but I think it's closer than what it's being presented as. And I think I've seen some sports books where Jacksonville is like the heaviest favorite of any division, and that's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I want to quickly just jump in with his D'Amico Ryans comments, just because I was going to say, that's a team I see. Like, do you guys remember the 21 Lions and Big Red? I think you and I talked about this game where they beat Arizona in the year that Arizona was actually good, which we can do a whole podcast about what's going on with the Arizona Cardinals this year. But I see like a buy-in to where I could see Houston sneaking in a couple of wins that people didn't see coming. But I think Jacksonville wins, but I feel like it's going to be like a 9-8 or a 10-7 in the Tennessee, somewhere between that 8-9 to 10 win threshold.
I think we always underrate end of season quarterback injuries. I'll get to this when we get to the AFC North, but I think people thinking the Bengals are like so untouchable has a lot also to do with Lamar Jackson missing the end of the last two seasons that just gets completely ignored, especially in 21. I think they were the one seed when Lamar Jackson got hurt. We just ignore it. Before Tannehill got hurt, the Titans were 7-6. They finished 7-10. Like, they had to lose every single game to not win that division. So we do kind of underrate that effect on the Titans' ability to repeat this year, I would say. I think the Jags are the biggest favorite just because the other divisions have better, like, secondary contenders in most people's eyes. Like, they could see the Chargers or the Jets or the Ravens. They can't really see that as much with the Titans. But Mike Vrabel is like Mike Tomlin in a weird way. Like,
yeah, the, ne- The next time he has a bad team will be the first time.
They'll be really good as underdogs. They'll be very feisty. They'll be in every game. Like, I think his ability to do well is being underrated. The only thing I'll say on the Texans and Colts, because for both teams, I could see them surprising some people, but this is going to be a common theme. I remember I said this last year about the Browns. You have to have bad teams in the AFC. And unfortunately for the Colts and Texans, they just kind of profile like the most likely ones. There's going to be like four or five terrible AFC teams. There just is statistically. And you have to find them. And in the other divisions, it's kind of hard to find them. So these two teams with rookie quarterbacks, it just makes sense that it would be them.
And I think we quickly learned that last year too, when everyone's hyping up the AFC West and stuff like that. You know, the whole four teams are going to make the playoffs from here, yada, 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 when only two made it and two were just really bad. So I think it's that whole like just don't overreact to what's going on. Like, there's going to be a few teams out there that no one sees as being bad right now that end up, it's just, look, luck doesn't go your way and just shit happens.
Yeah. I think that's really well said. And I think that there's a strong case that, you know, I think it's closer to 60-40, 65-35 than the odds showing it right now, like 80-20 towards Jacksonville.
And another thing with Jacksonville, too, is it's that week five game against your guys, Greg, that I really look at for them as a big test. I know it's overseas in London, so it's a little bit of an even playing field. But still, that's their first, like, I know they have Kansas City week two, but, look, Kansas City is the ultimate juggernaut. Like, Kansas City is Kansas City, but for a team like you guys where it's still that elite team in the AFC, I feel like that's the test where people are going to be like, hey, is this Jacksonville team legit or not? Also, because week two still is a little bit early in the season to debate that. I feel like by week five, you can kind of get the footing of, we know what this team is. It's like the Dennis Green metaphor. We are who they thought they were.
I mean, are people like Jack? I know Jacksonville's defense had like a lot of really good games last year, but like you look at that defensive roster and who is the superstars on that defense? You know, like
Josh Allen.
Say it again.
Josh Allen.
I guess. Had a good camp though. No.
I think Josh Allen is a good pass rusher. Good. I don't know if he's like a top 20.
No. I'm saying like the big name on that roster, like the one name that sticks out. That's where I was.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah. They were
9-8. Like, it's impressive that they like overcame that playoff game the way they did. They were still down 27-0 at one point. Like, they barely won. My point, they barely beat Josh Dobbs in Week 18. They won it by the thinnest of margins last year already. So then
maybe if Trayvon Walker takes a big leap in year two, Devin Lloyd. I like Luakon. But he's not like a household name. Most people can't pronounce his name.
I just feel like most defenses in the AFC have a better best player on defense than they do.
Agreed. Agreed. Majority.
Yeah. And the only other thing I'll say about the South is that they still host they have Greg and Isaiah McKenzie now, and they also have Big Rat. Big Rat knows this. YWC Football Talk's favorite wide receiver, Michael Pittman Jr. So we'll see what can happen there. But I feel like the Colts are I'll say 5-12. I feel like it's going to be a growing pains year where I actually have a thing I want to present to you guys with the Colts. I see going one of two ways in like three by 2025. They're either the Bears with Justin Fields where it's like, okay, this year's got to be the year you break through. Or for some reason they turn things around and out of nowhere, hey, it's another version of the Eagles. I'm not saying like Super Bowl, but I'm saying like that's the like best case scenario for that team. And that's still a few years away for them.
I like it.
I'm not a believer of Anthony Richardson, man, but, you know, crazier things have happened. So, I mean, I know you said you're a fan of him, but.
Well, he compares to Josh Allen. That's probably why Greg likes him.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Defying the odds.
Oh, well, anyway, we'll move on now. AFC North. I feel like this is the hardest division to read just because I feel like you have four teams that can truly, truly make noise. And because with Cincinnati, you have Burrow's calf. We don't know exactly what to expect, but I feel like they'll rebound well. He did get hurt early on someone else last year who got hurt early on. And then Pittsburgh's always a pest. Pittsburgh's that thorn in your side you can't get rid of. Baltimore's the one team I'm still trying to read. I feel like the Todd Monken offense, it's like college. It's like you can just throw out whatever and expect to be good. But I feel like with the NFL, he's got to learn how to scheme properly. Otherwise, it could go maybe a little haywire. And Greg, I know you live there, but like I don't want to root for the individual. But something's just telling me that Cleveland could be that team this year that like goes from like, you know, the basement to first. I'm not saying they're going to win the division, but like if all goes right for them, what's stopping them from being even a wild card team this year?
So obviously I agree wholeheartedly on the division. I actually think they have the weirdest setup from a favorite standpoint, because I do think most people are just defaulting that the Bengals are the favorite. And I would actually pick the Ravens. And I actually think out of any team, if you're going to go through all the divisions and look at the fourth place team in any division, the one that's the most realistic odds to me is the Steelers. Like, I actually don't think it's crazy at all with the additions they've made to the offensive line and maybe a year two bump with Pickett with the surroundings around him. I don't think it's crazy. And all of that is not even giving any credit to the Browns, who, you know, again, the Browns are much more likely to be the Browns than anything else. And they always find a way to be weird and mess it up. But if they can go back and capture, you know, the last time we saw Deshaun Watson playing in for a sustained period of time, he was a top five quarterback in the league. Like, that's not an exaggeration. Like, he was a top five quarterback in the league. Now, he looked like trash at the end of last year. And we haven't seen that top five quarterback for three NFL seasons. So I think it's valid to question it. But if they somehow get that guy back, this roster is really good on paper. So, I mean, that division is wide open. And I think that the people just assuming that it's Cincinnati running away with it are crazy. Obviously, they're very good. Burrow, Chase, Higgins, they deserve to be up there in the discussion. But as prohibitive as what they're put up there, I think is off base.
So I have, just before we get into anything else, I have the division odds here, courtesy of FanDuel. The Bengals are plus 150. The Ravens are plus 210. The Browns are actually in third at plus 400. And then the Steelers are in fourth at plus 470. So
470, that's good money.
That's good odds.
For all three of them, even if you want to go Cleveland at plus 400, I think that's a pretty good investment. One player with Cleveland I'm kind of interested to see because, look, it's a new face. Danny's going to hate me for saying this, but it is Elijah Moore. I'm not saying he's going to be good. I'm just interested to see, like, what does he do? Because, obviously, look, he was pissed off in New York for a while, so we'll see what happens with him. Plus, save Chubb, plus Njoku. But I will say this with Cleveland, though. If it does not go right, Kevin Stefanski's out of a job. I still think that is the hottest seat in the NFL going into this year.
Well, yeah, it's just like part of Nathaniel Hackett's downfall. Sure, you can point to all the organizational stuff with the Broncos last year, but the cold hard facts was Hackett and Russ was a terrible combo, and you couldn't get rid of Russ. So you just had no choice but to get rid of the head coach because you couldn't do that for a second year, and you can't change quarterbacks. It's going to be a similar logic in Cleveland. Whether you like Stefanski or not, whether you think it's his fault or not, Deshaun Watson's not going anywhere. So you either do the marriage for a third season, technically, caveats applied, or you change the head coach. That's just the unfortunate reality of it. Watson has more power than he does right now for that reason.
I just feel like if they don't get rid of him after this season, it's going to be like if they get off to, say, like a 2-3 start in 2024, then it's going to be like that mid-season firing, and then it's like the season's a wash. So I feel like you got to rip off the Band-Aid in January or you don't rip it off at all.
Yeah, to me, though, they just have that dark cloud over them still. I don't know. I just look at them, and I'm just like, I don't think it's their year, you know? But like he said, the roster is there. Everything's there. Yeah. It's all on Deshaun. It's all on Deshaun, man.
They have pieces.
I was going to say on the Watson thing about being bad last year, he was. And, you know, I don't think anyone can't predict with certainty how this is going to go. Is he going to be good? Is he going to be great? Is he going to be terrible? Is he going to be mediocre? Like, no one really knows. It could be anything. It should be pointed out that he did participate in training camp last year. I feel like that's often missed in this discussion. People act like the Browns picked him up in week 12 and he had, like, never played with those guys before. He was there all of OTAs, the entire summer, all of preseason. And then, sure, missing 11 games is a very big deal. I don't deny that. But I just think that there's a chance that he stays kind of middling or bad. And if you're middling or bad in a division with Lamar and Joe Burrow, that's a big problem. Like, it's really hard to win a division that way when your quarterback is not at that level.
I agree. And I don't know how much stock you guys put into preseason, but, I mean, Mike Tomlin also said it best with the boxing reference. But the Steelers have looked damn good, probably the best of all teams in the preseason that have played their starters. So they're not no slouch there.
I feel like with the Steelers, though, that week one game, we're quickly going to learn what that offense is made of because they're going up against a top three defense in the NFL in San Fran right away. So we'll see about that. But actually, a bit of a surprise, guys. Podcast favorite Browns fan Andy McNamara has made a quick video to say a few words about the Browns. So we'll just take it off to him for a quick second to shoot on the Browns.
Oh, my Cleveland Browns, what's in store for 2023? Well, there's two words that are my motto for the Browns this season. No excuses. There's no excuses. You have the talent, you have the roster on paper to win this division. Bottom line, Deshaun Watson, for all the money you paid him, he better be looking like how he did in 2019-2020. You have Amari Cooper. Cedric Tillman as a rookie is going to make an impact. The X factor for me on this offense is Elijah Moore. When he went down with a little bit of a rib injury, they looked lost for a few series in practice. And this is a guy that they're lining up in the backfield, end around, slot, outside. He's going to be a gadget. He could be their Tyreek Hill version. I'm not saying he's going to be Tyreek Hill, but Elijah Moore is going to be an impact player for fantasy purposes as well. Later in the draft, you're getting into double-digit draft numbers. Get yourself some Elijah Moore if you're in PPR. That guy's going to be a player, I'm telling you. Donovan Peoples-Jones is a wild card. Last year of his rookie deal. How are they going to use him? Is he going to finally step up and earn that new contract in Cleveland or somewhere else? There's a big impact guy. Amari Cooper, of course, like we said. And a guy also, Austin Watkins, out of nowhere. Like a stone-cold stunner out of nowhere. Austin Watkins off the USFL. The guy's catching everything. Acrobatic catches. I hope he makes this team. And you give the bootski to scrubs like Anthony Schwartz, who can't stay healthy and can't catch a damn football as a receiver. David Njoku, another wild card bit on this offense. Is all the talent. Big body guy, 6'5". When guys are hanging off him, he makes every catch. He still has concentration drop issues. Can David Njoku be helped and elevated like so many great quarterbacks? Aaron Rodgers makes everyone around him better. Can Deshaun Watson get back to that level? The offense is tailored to him now. He helped devise the offense. You still have Nick Chubb, arguably the best running back in the game in your backfield. And the defense with Jim Schwartz. You got Za'Darius Smith on one side, the best compliment that Myles Garrett has ever had. Dalvin Tomlinson in the middle. You got the safeties. Ronnie Hickman Jr. I hope he makes this team too out of Ohio State. The guy's been 3 interceptions in 4 quarters of preseason football. Preseason. But you got playmakers everywhere is what I'm saying. This division is going to cannibalize each other, the AFC North. There might not be a wild card. There very likely probably won't be a wild card out of this division because they're going to cannibalize each other. So you got to win it. Pittsburgh can be beat. They're always going to be a tough out, but you can't let Kenny Pickett beat you. Baltimore is going to be all full of drama, and the Bengals are certainly tough, but you've had their number. No excuses for the Browns this year in the AFC North.
And anyway, thanks for that, Andy. But with Pittsburgh, I'm going to say this right now. You got to do the quick segues.
Got to get right back into it.
With Pittsburgh, I feel like from a betting standpoint, they'll be a great team to bet the under this year. Like, they're going to win a lot of those, like, you know, greasy, like, 17-14 or, like, 14-10 style football games. Like, do you guys remember the Raiders game Christmas Eve? Like, games like that.
For sure.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, any of these teams can win this division. And by default, one of these four teams is going to have to come in last. And it's hard to predict who it is, but I'm going to lean towards the Browns just because – and look, I am biased against Deshaun, not just for the regular reasons that everyone is biased, but also because of what he did to my franchise for an entire year, which was fucking hell. But I do think, logically, like, the Steelers haven't had a losing record in, like, 15 years. The other two teams are perennial playoff teams. If you had to just bet on one of these teams to come forth, it makes sense that that's the team you trust the least. They're also the team with high upside, great roster. Watson could be great, and they could win the division. I totally agree. But like I said at the top, you need to find some bad teams here. And if you had to pick which of these four teams to come in last, I just don't know how are the Steelers going to be worse this year than they were last year. That's what I really struggle with. With the additions on the O-line, with Pickett getting a second season, like I just don't know how that happens.
Week 2, they're in Pittsburgh on Monday Night Football. That's going to be a game to watch early on. I feel like with this NFL season, I feel like we're getting a lot of games where you're going to find out quickly what teams are made of. Like what teams, like I was saying earlier, the Dennis Green metaphor, they are who we thought they were. We're going to get a lot of that, I think, by the end of September.
I agree.
Yeah. But anyway, guys, on to the AFC West now. We have 4 teams that, look, last year they were the talk of the town. One of them won a Super Bowl in a year that no one expected them to win. One of them blew a perennial playoff lead. One of them just basically had a quarterback that flat out embarrassed himself, both online and on the field. And then you had a franchise that caused me pain and suffering in Week 15, but we're not going to talk about that. But I expect them to be bad this year in the Las Vegas Raiders. Obviously, look, we're going to put Kansas City in one. That's a given. That's just the ultimate given. Like we could be that crazy podcast where it's like, you know what? No, this is the year they regress. But I feel like Big Rat, you said this before with the Patriots. Remember there's all those years where we expect them to win the Super Bowl and they don't? I feel like this is that kind of year for Kansas City where I still feel like they'll be playing late in January. Don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't pick them as a super to win the Super Bowl again to go back-to-back just because, A, it's so hard, and B, they always – Kansas City always seems to lose in those years when you think that they're going to win.
Well, I think last year was a better example of that, where last year they lost Tyreek Hill and everyone kind of thought, oh, maybe something bad will happen to them. Maybe things will be different this year. And that's when they win the Super Bowl.
Like the Patriots in Dynasty 2.0.
And they win in 2019. In 2020, they start the year, like, I think 14-1 for the rest of their starters. Everyone assumed they'd just repeat, and they did not. So more
crappy spread team, 2020. They were 14-2, but they went 7-9 against spread that year. I remember that vividly. Like, they barely beat, like, the awful Panthers and, like, the Falcons. They beat the Falcons because Koo missed a field goal.
The only comment I'll have on the Chiefs, because I'm certainly not doubting them. No one can at this point. They are the team that everyone thinks they are in terms of, like, they will be 12. I think I saw a stat that Andy Reid has gone over his preseason win total every year in Kansas City. And the total's already set pretty high. I would just say that them not having another receiving option outside of Kelsey, I do think that still matters. Like, Juju had over 900 receiving yards last year. Can you really say with confidence that Sky Moore or Kadarius Toney or Rashee Rice is going to get 900 receiving yards this year? I'm just saying, I think because they won the Super Bowl, everyone thinks it doesn't matter that their receivers kind of suck. And I'm like, that's not quite how this works.
You'd like to think at some point it matters. The season that it's going to matter is when eventually Father Time catches up with Travis Kelce. And then all of a sudden they don't get the benefit of the, you know, so much leverage and gravity going towards Kelce. I don't know if it's this year. Travis Kelce has played like 10 consecutive completely healthy seasons. But at some point that's when I would expect it to happen.
Mm-hmm. And listen, they can score with anyone too, right? But this Chris Jones stuff is real, you know, and that's a huge missing piece on their defense right there if they don't get that settled out. And it doesn't look like they are. So, I mean,
he's the reason they went to the Super Bowl last year.
Big time, man.
Oh, yeah. He was huge. Huge. Yeah, he was a monster that entire playoff run.
So if they don't get that squared away, that's going to probably cost them a couple games there.
So I do think that, sadly, won't matter in the standpoint of he's going to be back by midseason because he also wants his vested veteran status and to be able to be a free agent the next year. But maybe that does, like you said, maybe that does cost him a couple early season games where all of a sudden now home field advantage or the division is in question. And, you know, now the AFC, that first round bye has never mattered more than it does right now because, you know, you're going to have a damn good team not make the playoffs, let alone the wild cards are all going to be really good teams. You know, all the teams we rattled off tonight, someone out of the Chargers, the you know, Steelers, Ravens, Bengals, Bills, Dolphins, Jets, two of those teams aren't even making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So two teams where their fan base right now is certain they are making the playoffs, two of them aren't even going to make it.
And this will probably be relevant, I presume, at the end. We'll maybe give some wild card teams once we're done with everything, but I see a lot of playoff predictions kind of just copying last year's standings. Yeah. And it almost never, ever, ever goes that way. So thinking it'll be the same four division winners and like Ravens, Chargers, either. I've seen some people say, well, instead of the Dolphins, it'll be the Jets this year. That's not enough change for the way the playoff picture usually
goes. It hasn't been for like a decade.
Just there's going to be more chaos than that.
There's always that one team everyone thinks is going to do well that just – falls flat on their ass, like last year how we had the Raiders. And well, the Raiders, I never believed it, but it was more the Broncos just because of like what we saw out of them. But with Kansas City, though, like their first three games are, I'm not saying easy, but they should be 3-0 going into October because they have the Lions, the Jags, and the Bears. And then week four is that Sunday Night Football game in New York against the Jets. So we'll see there. But then the other thing, too, is let's say this. Like, because I know Chris Jones had that weird tweet. I don't think you guys saw it, but he said apparently week eight is the week that, like, that's the week for him to, like kind of like how with the Jonathan Taylor six-game thing. I think it's week eight for him where he can afford to not play. And so week nine would be coming back to the game in Germany, which I don't really see him doing that, coming back to play your first game of the year on a foreign field, obviously, in a foreign country. So I think if he is coming back, it's sometime in that, like, week 5 to 6, or maybe even 3 or 4 range, basically between week 3 and week 6. But I definitely think he, at this point, he misses the first 2 games easily.
Yeah, he has to be on the roster and active at a minimum by week 11 is the the cutoff to be able to get vested veteran status.
And they play the, that's the Super Bowl rematch on Monday Night Football against the Eagles, because obviously they play the Jets early on, they play the Dolphins in Germany, and then, Greg, they have us sandwiched in between for Kansas City. But week 14, you guys go to Kansas City. Week 15, they come to us, which should be another birthday loss for me.
Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Yes, ever since Tom's left, they've never won on my birthday, and last year was obviously the Raider game, so it's been fun. But yeah, 2 days.
Chandler Jones, like, driving your birthday down into the ground.
We also had a family Christmas gathering that day, and, like, there's people, like, family, like, down, like, in this literal basement where I'm recording right now, watching the game with me, and they're like, oh, my, like can't believe it, and like, oh, I'm sorry, and I'm just like, I'm gonna go, I need to decompress, and then Big Red, I need space. I know, I'm like mentally decompressing. I'm like, y'all are here, and I'm broken right now. But with that, I honestly don't know what to think of the Vegas Raiders, just thinking about them. Like, I feel like they – so, Big Red, you know how we always talked about, like, the Colts and Jags thing where the Colts can't win against them? Did you guys know that Denver hasn't beaten the Raiders since, I believe, 2018 or 2019?
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so – I think if you're looking for a risky, because I know, Big Red, you always give out like risky survival picks for week one. I feel like that could be one where the Raiders beat the Broncos, just because both teams are still getting their footing, new head coach. But with that being said, I feel like Vegas as a whole, like, their offense has some stuff to it, but not much. And then their defense, I feel like, is Max Crosby and then just a bunch of guys.
What do you guys think about Aiden O'Connell?
I'm a big fan. I was a fan of his in college.
I mean, I feel like he'll be a capable quarterback, but I don't think he's like a starter. I feel like he's going to be like that backup, that like a Mike White, you know, when like his name gets called upon, he can come in and be reliable for you guys.
Or he could be like, he could be like the guy who started in front of him.
Yeah, the minority order.
You know, he's not that guy. No. Jimmy Garoppolo was, you know, kind of a scrappy, you know, underdog who, oh, hey, I think he's capable of starting, but, you know, he's not going to start here because they obviously had Brady at the time. So he goes out to San Francisco, plays pretty well, is kind of bounced around, but is never going to be the answer to anything. I think that's what Aiden O'Connell is. I think he's a starting caliber quarterback. I don't think he's ever going to be the reason any team wins anything. But the fact, if you get a starting caliber quarterback from a, you know, later round pick at quarterback, that's a huge slam dunk. And I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is anything spectacular anymore. So if you have that there, I'll give you one tip. I do my season win total bets very early before all the odds go crazy. And I have $100 on the Raiders to go under 6.5. They are offering me more money now to cash out the bet, and no games have been played.
Oh my God.
They are offering me money now. They haven't even lost a game yet, and they're so uncomfortable with the odds for the Raiders under bet. It's the only one. I have, like, I don't know, like 20 season win total bets in. It's the only one where they're offering me more money to just cash out and be like, no, just take some free money because we don't want to lose this bet. So I can tell you, Vegas doesn't believe in the Vegas Raiders.
Oh my God. I'm looking at their schedule right here, and like their first like 8 weeks aren't really that, it's not a cakewalk. Like, they have at the Broncos, then they go to Buffalo, then they host Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football, which interesting that that's a primetime game. At the Chargers, versus the Packers on Monday Night Football, versus the Patriots, at the Bears, versus at the Lions. That is actually, so they have back-to-back where they play at Chicago and at Detroit. Detroit, Monday Night Football. And then they get the Giants, the Jets, the Dolphins, the Chiefs, and then they have their bye week 13.
I'm going to make that Vegas trip too to go see that game Sunday night.
Well, and that's so exactly what you're talking about, Danny, is part of the reason that I get why the NFL is excited for Vegas to be there. But it's also every other fan base's favorite road trip to go to. they're never going to have an actual home field advantage ever. It's always going to be at best 70-30, maybe, you know, some games 60-40 or 50-50. And the big, you know, when you have the big traditional fan bases that travel all over the place, you get you know, a Pittsburgh, a Dallas, or even like a Green Bay or a Buffalo, or people that, like, you know, travel in droves, you can get like 60% away fans at home games. So it's, they don't get a home field advantage at all.
You know, their first three home games are Steelers, Packers, and Patriots. And those are fan bases that travel very, very long.
Not once are they going to have a home field advantage in those three.
And then they get the Giants and the Jets, which both of those travel. Like, you know, they'll travel. Like, yeah. Hey, do I want to escape New York in the beginning of November?
Oh, you should have thrown Lambeau Field last year, though, the amount of Jet fans are up there.
Their only real one is going to be, like, the Chargers home game. That's it. Yeah, every other game, you can make me a decent case that they're going to be even or outnumbered.
Listen, to wrap up the Raiders, though, just get me Devontae to the Jets by next year, and I'm good. That's all I care.
I got a good over-under quickly. How soon into the season do we hear those – Devontae Adams, Stephen A. Smith, like, which Greg will get into that in a few minutes. The Stephen A. Smith, like, rumors that Devontae Adams wants out of Vegas. How soon into the season? I'm going to say, like, week 4 or 5.
It's very doable. Very, very doable. Although,
it's just the money's impossible to make it happen this year.
Yeah, it's not even great next year. They have to eat, like, a $24 million dead cap hit to move him. But, you know, anybody can be motivated if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, if they're firing McDaniels and rebuilding, maybe not doing as aggressive as the Cardinals, but a similar version of that, and someone gives you a first round pick for him, it's like, yeah, eating the cap hit would suck, but you know, we're kind of in the direction of losing more anyway, so you can kind of somewhat justify it at that point. But it would require something like that, not like they go 8-9, everyone comes back, and they're trying to fight for their jobs in 2024. Seems unlikely that you would trade your best player.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. Moving on to the Denver Broncos, do we actually see, like, anything from them? Because I'm in the boat that they're going to be competitive, but they won't be a playoff team. Like, they'll be that maybe 6. I believe they were 5-12 last year, so I feel like they'll be that 6 or 7 win team that's, like, you know, in the mix, but then they lose 20 games early on to where by the middle of December, especially that Christmas Eve game they have against the Patriots, which, cheap plug, I know, that it's just too little too late, that they can probably play spoiler, but, like, even them too, like, their schedule's a little more balanced, but, like, week 3, they go to Miami. I think that's their first test, because, like, they play the Raiders week 1, then they play the Commanders week 2, which that's another game. That's another team we could talk about if we wanted to skip over to the other conference. And then Miami week 3. So it's just that mix in there. And then +2, like, they gave prime time to you guys, Greg, Monday Night Football. They gave the Patriots Broncos prime time on Christmas Eve, and then obviously Danny week 5, 4:25.
Hey, they had that one on prime time after all that that little fiasco.
I want to quickly check to see what the primetime game is week 5, and
it's the Cowboys. I believe
it's the Cowboys and the 49ers. Yeah. No chance in hell that gets flexed.
I mean, that's not going nowhere.
No.
I think the Broncos. I'll do the Broncos and Chargers kind of quickly because I'm sure we all want to get to the AFC East teams. Like, the Broncos, like, Russ can improve. Sure, he can be better. Sure.
Yeah.
But, again, much like with Deshaun Watson, you have Herbert and Mahomes in your division. It's not good enough to just be average. You have to be, like, good again in order to, like, compete against these other teams. And we'll get to this when we talk about Danny's Jets. Like, I feel like this is the biggest mistake people make in the NFL every year, where they just assume your defense will be as good as it was last year. That almost – it's hard to maintain unless you have, like, a top-tier defensive coach as the head coach in McDermott's case or Belichick's case, or as a high-level coordinator who you keep over time. So there's a great stat. I think if the Broncos, if they had averaged 19 points per game last year, 19, which is still pretty bad, they would have started the year 10-1. 10-1 with bad offense.
That's crazy.
The problem was their offense was, historically god-awful. So I think their story is kind of boring. The offense won't be that bad. The defense won't be that good. They'll be closer to a middling team. But with all these good AFC teams we're talking about, it's just going to take a lot to bump one of those teams off.
I have a take with Buffalo, Denver. We'll get into Buffalo in a few minutes. Is Pat Surtain a top 5 corner in the league? Because I feel like he's one of those guys that he's good, but he's not appreciated as much as he should be.
Absolutely top 5.
Yeah.
I think he's top 5, and he's not 4th or 5th.
Yeah, he's top. Yeah, I think it's like him, Sauce, and then you could throw whoever in there in the three. But when it comes to him, I just feel like, because, like, look, obviously Sauce garners a lot of attention, but, like, I feel like with Patrick Surtain, these Alabama corners just go out there and ball on a consistent basis. Like, we've seen when healthy, Marlon Humphrey do it for years. So even Eddie Jackson, too. I know Eddie Jackson's not to the level anymore in Chicago, but Eddie Jackson still has had a pretty solid NFL career. The only thing I'll say about the Chargers quickly is I think if they do not win a playoff game, Brandon Staley's gone. I just think that, look, they're giving them all the pieces to succeed now. You're going to have – I think O-line's a big question for them. I think the running back game is a big question for them. But they finally got Herbert a big receiver toy to play with. So if him and Quentin Johnston can make magic happen, then I think they can go a long way. But I just feel like at the end of the day, they are their own worst enemy.
Just like the Browns, like we said earlier.
Yeah.
They're always in their own way.
And on Staley, like, it is kind of disconcerting that these rumors of his job security happen after two winning seasons in a playoff game. You know, you don't usually hear guys like that being on the hot seat.
I feel like the dogs are barking for the Chargers, but I feel like with the Chargers, it's just the fact the way they've lost the playoffs the last couple of years, where, you know, that effective win or go home game against the Raiders, Week 18, Sunday Night Football, and then obviously the Jacksonville game last year, blowing the 27-0 lead, where I nearly threw $50 on the Jags as a joke and would have won $1,000, but I didn't do it, and look what happened there. Well, anyway, guys, you've waited for this very moment. We've all waited for this very moment.
Wait. Sorry. Now that I put the dogs away, I just wanted to very quickly say the Chargers, yes, you never really hear about coaches that are successful in the hot seat. I think that tells you that something's wrong. I think you hear this kind of like scuttlebutt that Staley has some problems with the locker room, and it's like you're hearing this about successful teams, you know?
Yeah, that's just it. Where I feel like, too, even the Spanoses, they get in their, like, they're one of those teams where ownership gets in the way more than it should. Anyway, guys, I started the intro before. I said it before, and I'll say it again. This is the moment you've all waited for. This is the moment I know we've all been stewing to talk about because each one of us loves a different team from the AFC East. Gentlemen, welcome to the AFC East gauntlet. I know each of us are feeling good about all our teams, but deep down inside, is there more than anything to say, hey, do we think they can be good? Is there anything that concerns you? Is there anything that you may look at as something that could hold you back from finding success this year?
Should we do like one team
at a time?
Let's do one team at a time. Let's start. You know what? We'll be respectful. We're going to go by last year's division standings.
Okay.
Just because I feel like 1, 2, 3, 4, that's just how we're going to do it. First off, we're going to start with the Buffalo Bills. I feel like, too, with this one as well, when we do someone's team, let's wait for the person who's a fan of that team to go last. So for Buffalo, Greg goes last. Dolphins, Big Rat goes last. I'll go last for New England. Then Danny goes last for his Jets.
I like it.
So you want me to start it off as
– You guys could go by the 2021 standings, too, if you want. Or you could go by the 2020 standings, too, if you want to use that. Your choice. You guys' choice. You guys could choose
I haven't heard this
any of those years.
0-3 against the spread against the Dolphins last year.
You guys can
– All 3 games the Dolphins covered. All 3 games.
I remember for so many years when he used to cling to things like that. It's so funny to hear other people talk like that. It's awesome. I remember for so many years I used to be like, yeah, but we were pretty close and, like – It was close.
I remember so many years. Though. We actually won a game against the Bills last year.
Yeah, correct. I had a lot of stretches with the Patriots where we won 1 out of 9 games. Very, very similar to the Dolphins winning 1 out of the last 9 games. Super, super similar experience. You're right.
All right. Now he has to be quiet. Now we can bury
it. Taking a loss to Zach Wilson is rough, though. I don't know.
They almost lost to Zach Wilson and Skylar Thompson last year. Zach Wilson and Skylar Thompson. All right.
Okay.
All right. So what? So you want me to start this off since I was last? So I'll talk about the first place team. And
yeah. So start off. Big. So Danny, what do you think?
Obviously, the Bills are. They are the cream of the crop. They are the kings of the division. They have been. You have to give them that respect. You know, but I don't know. Their big guys on defense are all coming back from injury. Both their safeties, Vaughn Miller, still has to come back. You know, obviously they still have young studs. Also, Trey White. You don't know how if he's going to go back to being an elite corner or not. So I think there are legit questions there with the defense of how elite it will be this year. But other than that, man, they're fine. You know, they should cruise. I don't know if any of our teams will give them the trouble of trying to win the division. I hope so. I want to say so as a fan. But you know, respect to them. I think they're going to do their thing. And, yeah, they're a contender. That's really all I can say.
I'm going to go next. With defense, it's a thing. With me, I'm going to go and I also, you know, running back's an easy one to go for. I want to go offensive line just because I know, look, Mitch Morse, great offensive lineman. Deion Dawkins is a player I actually really like. I don't know why, but I always giggle when I hear the URE Schnoe. I don't know why. I just kind of – it always – it's one of those, like, little niche things that always just makes me laugh, and I'm like, fuck, he pushed the enemy. But when it comes to them, it's just, like, the overall health because I know Ike Bottinger's still there, right? Or is he gone? I'm sure.
He's probably – he's there. He's very likely not going to be by Tuesday at 4 o'clock.
Okay, so, yeah, he's another player. I know he's just been hurt. I know – this is going to be another bad one too for me. I'm at that point right now with the NFL where I'm going to like learn the rosters. Even like, I know a guy like Ryan Bates last year, I believe, was in and out of the lineup. You did bring in Connor McGovern. It's just, I feel like more than offensive line play, it's offensive line health. And can they stay relatively healthy throughout the year? Because we all know once you start mixing in combinations, it is like that. My only concern, I'll say, with the defense more than anything is how does it look? And also, I say offensive line, I'm not concerned about the play because I like Aaron Cromer. But with defense, it's how does it look without Leslie Frazier? That's where I want to go with the defense on that angle. So with Buffalo.
I'll talk about the pass catchers part of it because I do think there's a lot of hype about Dalton Kincaid right now. At least, and again, this is why it's good to talk to people who are fans of the team. There's stuff we hear nationally that may not agree with what's local.
Like I'm exactly why I want to do this segment. Sorry to cut you off, Big Rat.
Yeah, I'll have a few comments similar to that when it comes to the Finns. But like Kincaid, like I do wonder, like, is he good enough already to be the second best pass catcher on that team? Is that going too far? Not just because of, you know, Gabe Davis did have a 200-yard game in the playoffs. I'm sure Greg's going to tell us all about the high ankle sprain. That is why he didn't take off last year or whatever. But he did have a 200-yard game in the playoffs. That should be respected. And Dawson Knox did sign a $57 million contract. So, and I was rewatching actually the Dolphins Bills playoff game recently, like a few days ago, and he scored in that game. And they said that Knox had scored in 5 straight games to close the season, apparently. So not certainly not trying to discount him in any way, but I do think in today's NFL, one of the lessons from the past few Super Bowls, remove the Chiefs. One of the lessons is you need 2 elite weapons. It's not good enough to have 1 anymore. The Bengals had 2. The Rams had 2 before Odell Beckham got hurt in that Super Bowl. He was a monster in that whole playoff run they had down the stretch. Was their best receiver in that Niners game, in the NFC title game. The Eagles had 2, very clearly. The Bucs had 2 with Evans and Godwin. That's kind of modern football. But if you could draw one corollary to the past like few years, it's that most of these elite teams have more than 1 like really unstoppable dominant weapon. And I just wonder if Can Gabe Davis do that off injury? Can Cade do that? And then, yeah, I mean, not going to get the Bills-Dolphin thing. I'll talk about more, I guess, when we talk about the Finns. I think that makes more sense out of respect to the champs. So can they have a secondary pass catcher be a strength? And if they don't, does that matter? So those are my comments.
I remember earlier, too, when I asked Greg for, like, this whole thing, he's just, like I said, like, even strengths, he's just like, we have Josh Allen, that's it. I'm like, no. Give the people something that, like, maybe they're not talking about. Like, and also, too, if it's Andy Isabella, I should have put money on that.
Yeah. So, everybody good?
Yes, we're good.
We have all this stuff out? All right, okay. Honestly, everyone was very fair. I think that there are things. This is not a perfect roster. I think that it's better than some of the – I think some people try to present it as it's like, Josh Allen and then everybody else. Like, there's a lot of talent on this roster also, but not to be reductive, having Josh Allen's awful nice. Like, it's awful nice. So to Big Rat's point, I think that's very, very valid. The exception is when you have the superstar quarterback. Most of the rest of those teams had a very good distributor of the ball, but wasn't actually much of a threat or of themselves. So having that as an added piece, I think, helps bring a little bit more to it. So Dalton Kincaid, all the hype that you guys have heard is real from what we've been there. I got to see a good chunk of it in person and have had folks there on site and in person almost every day that we've had coverage there. he seems really real. I think all of the numbers about rookie tight ends are accurate. I think there's reason to kind of manage expectations, but God, he looks good. Like I think he's going to be a special player. We'll see if that's in 2023. I don't know. I can't say that. Yes, it's going to be Mike Ditka and Rob Gronkowski and Dalton Kincaid. And like, he's going to, do what barely any rookie tight end has done in football history. So I don't think it's realistic to expect that, but he's looked really, really good. I think the nice part is it doesn't have to be that, because it's going to be more like Kansas City, where there's a top weapon who is absolutely number one. And then there's a whole bunch of other pieces that I think Big Rat saw last year. Trent Sherfield's a nice NFL receiver. He can contribute. Anybody who watched when he was healthy in New Orleans as Deontay Harris, now he's Deontay Hardy, that's an explosive player. Khalil Shakir as your sixth offensive weapon isn't too bad. Dawson Knox as kind of the forgotten tight end, who's actually still pretty good, is kind of nice. So I don't think there's a guy. Gabe Davis is good. I don't think Gabe Davis is spectacular. I don't think he's ever going to be a wide receiver one. I also think he's an above average wide receiver two. Of course he's not T. Higgins. He's not Jalen Waddle. Of course he's not any of those guys. But there's an awful lot of teams where if they had Gabe Davis, their number two receiver would now be better. He's better than a lot of other teams' number two receivers. So I think in that light, I think some people took that playoff game that Big Rat talked about, and that offseason, I genuinely had Bills fans telling me it was okay if Stephon Diggs left because we had Gabe Davis. So I'm glad that that has come back down to reality, and now we're back into the zone of he's a good receiver. He's not a superstar. He's not going to be a wide receiver one for anybody, but he's also good. He's a good receiver and is capable of those big plays when we need him. So it is going to be Diggs and then a committee, but when that committee is Gabe Davis and Dalton Kincaid and Trent Sherfield and Dawson Knox and maybe a bump from, the running backs, which I'll talk about here in a moment, I think there's a chance it could be fun. So the not cheating and saying, hey, our biggest strength is having Josh Allen. It is. That is the accurate statement. The sneaky one that I think people don't realize is I think we might actually have a running game for the first time that Josh Allen's been here because – and I'll talk about it in my weakness in a moment, but the additions they made on the offensive line are awesome run blockers. So Osiris Torrance is a road grader and is crazy in how he moves people. Spencer Brown is a great run blocker. Dawson Knox is a very good run blocking tight end. Reggie Gilliam's a good fullback. We've had kind of iffy running backs for the past while. Zach Moss was a fine player. Devin Singletary was a fine player. We haven't had anybody good in a while. James Cook has looked really nice. Damian Harris obviously has had fantastic seasons in the past for the Patriots. Latavius Murray has no right to move the way that he does at 6'3", 230, and 33 years old. It's insane. Like, I don't understand how he is as fast as what he is. So I do think that they're going to be able to put something together there that can actually be a bit more complementary than what we've been for the past couple of years, where we had to throw the ball first, second, third, fourth down. It could never run the ball. So a little bit of balance. Maybe we actually have some play action now. Maybe some of those things actually work. Whereas before, everybody knew we were passing every single snap because, of course, we were passing. The downside of that is I still have some apprehension about their ability to protect Josh Allen. The interior, I think, is legitimately better. Osiris Torrance has beaten out Ryan Bates, so Ryan Bates is now going to be a backup. David Edwards came over. He started every game for the Rams in their Super Bowl season, and he's now going to be a backup. So it's him and Connor McGovern on the left side. They brought in Osiris Torrance, who beat out Bates there. Morris and Dawkins are good. Spencer Brown's been an issue. Torrance is a better run blocker than he is a pass blocker. I'm hoping that all the 12 personnel, where they bolt on Dawson Knox just next to Spencer Brown, 60% of the snaps, is just one extra chip or one extra, the defensive end has to bump out a gap and it can help inside. But that's if there is a, chink in the armor and something that's going to derail this season, it's going to be too much pressure on Josh. And then you get into the spots where if he loses trust in the offensive line, you see him bail from pockets early, because how can he trust them to hold up? Because the last time that he trusted them, there was too much pressure. So they've made some investments. There are some improvements, but that's the biggest area that I have concern with, is can they protect Josh Allen?
I'm going to touch on Damian Harris quickly, just because I always think of him with this, the 2021 season especially. Two of his best games came against the Buffalo Bills. Obviously, he had the lone Patriot touchdown in the goofy weather game, but also the Patriot game in Foxborough, he had three rushing touchdowns. So he's the kind of guy that, like, he's there, but, like, I don't know if he's RB1. So I feel like if you have James Cook as your RB1 and you have Damian Harris kind of slot in, like, be that, like, chunk yardage guy, or even put him up into the passing game, I feel like that's where he'll be most successful for Buffalo. And also, too, he's just one of those guys. I know I was saying earlier with Elijah Moore, which I know Danny's not happy with, but he needs just that change of scenery. Like, New England, it wasn't working out. Like, even last year towards the end of the season, like, he was dealing with injuries. And also, too, like, Ramondre's obviously taken over. So that's just one thing I want to touch on with him. Yeah. But the other thing, too, with Dawson Knox, I want to add, I can see a bounce back, because I feel like a lot of people forget about last year. He had a very, very tragic offseason that happened to him, obviously, with his brother. Yeah. So I don't know if that affected his play, but it's just, I think those are things that people don't factor in, because obviously, look, he went through something very, very tragic, and obviously the whole team did later in the season. But I feel like with him as well, he's a very big bounce back candidate to be back in that top tight end conversation. Obviously not, like, we know who the top guys are, but I feel like he easily could be like a top 10 tight end.
Yeah, and I think some people, do I think he's playing like a $14 million tight end? No, I don't. But I also think some people then conflate that to, oh, he's a bum. I mean, he had 56 catches for 600 yards and 7 touchdowns. Like, it's pretty good. You know, it's not like he's, you know, it's nothing. So I like that idea. And I actually think he's going to continue to produce pretty similar to what we've seen. Dalton Kincaid's a slot receiver. He's a slot receiver. Like, he's a tight end in name only. I was there at camp for 5 days. I think I saw the guy put his hand in the dirt one time in 5 days. Like, he's just a big slot receiver.
And I think I would be remiss. We hinted at it earlier. I don't know if, like, we directly asked you about it, but we have to talk about Stephon Diggs. So I'm sure, like, because, look, I know how – I'm not going to discredit anything you're about to say. You have more information than we do. But I just know that every fan base, if something like this were to happen, immediately the default would be the media is overblowing it. This is ridiculous. Da, 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 da. And I'm not saying they are. I'm not saying that's not valid in this case. I'm just saying that would be the fan base's response, whether it was or wasn't true.
And did someone share their screen over Twitter, by the way? I was just going to open that up quickly.
Yeah. I just brought up his tweets.
Okay. Well, here's some of them right here.
Yes. Obviously, after Stephen A. Smith went on television and said he wants out, and then Diggs tweets this, right? That's the context. So
yeah, correct. Correct.
Are you just? I'm just asking you, as an informed fan, do you, like, put literally no stock into it? I understand maybe thinking it's overblown. Do you really put nothing into it?
So Stephon Diggs loves attention. He's a really, really big fan of it. He literally spends his whole offseason doing fashion shoots as a model. He loves attention. Attention's awesome. I like attention too. Attention's fun. I think he loves saying vague things that people have to read into. I think he loves being the center of attention. I think he knows that he has a literally untradeable contract, and there's nothing that anyone that they could do, even if they wanted to. Like, it's literally untradeable, so he can say anything he wants. And he's awesome. Like, he not only says all those things and does all those things, he has an insane work ethic. Like, he is working out so frequently. He also posts every single video of him working out every single time that he does it. But he's in ridiculous shape and works his butt off all the time. Some of the real ones, if you do, like, the footwork king, and the guys that works with all the best receivers, like, he's ridiculous. So, you know, do I love it? No. Would my life be easier if he would just play football? Yeah. But does it actually matter? No, it doesn't. Like, it, and on top of that, he's not going to be here forever because he's about to turn 30, not because he's going to talk his way out of it. Like, he's about to turn 30. Like, it's not going to go forever. It's not like there. So I think it's going to work like this for two or three more years. And then do I think he's going to end up playing in LA or New York or Miami or some flashy place? Probably. I don't know. Like, it seems he's probably going to live in Paris after he retires, and he's going to have a house in Paris, and he's going to have, I don't know, the house in some other fancy city, because that's what he likes. I don't know. He's a fancy man. But you want to know what? He can give everybody the business on the football field come September. So I'm all right.
So that's the title of the podcast. He's a fancy man. That's the title of the podcast.
You have any concerns, because you didn't really touch on it much, about the defense?
And I know – so Leslie Frazier was a very polarizing man here the last couple years. I think that he was unfairly maligned. I think this defense has been very good for 6 years. They've had seasons where it was elite. I think the lowest they've rated in 6 years is like seventh in the NFL. So, you know, people who were disappointed or frustrated with Leslie Frazier because the defense didn't play awesome in the playoffs. No defense plays awesome in the playoffs. The Eagles had the most sacks since the 85 Bears. Guess what didn't matter in the Super Bowl? Any defense. Guess why? Because all the good quarterbacks are left. Like, it's just, you got to outscore people to win. Now, don't get me wrong. Would I like a little more variance? Would I like a little more? Let me circle that back. I think we're going to see, when Sean McDermott was the defense coordinator with the Eagles and with the Panthers, he was super, super vanilla on first and second down, and then batshit crazy on third down. And you had no idea what was coming from where, and just madness all over the field. I wouldn't mind some of that, because when you have the offense that the Bills have, you can introduce some more variance. We don't need to win, you know, 17-14 anymore. We don't need to win 20-17 anymore. We can outscore people. So roll the dice. If you get a turnover and we get a two-score lead, you're screwed. You're not going to catch up. We're going to keep scoring, and you're not going to catch up. And if we go for the turnover and give up a score, most teams, we can catch up. So I would rather see introduce variance, go for more aggression, go for more sacks, go for more strips, go for more interceptions. And that, yes, if that means you give up some big touchdowns here or there, okay, that's part of the trade-off. But I'm kind of hoping we see that, because getting into those spots where you could end games and end drives with a big play rather than hoping you can stay in structure and, you know, bend but don't break your way down the field, I don't think that's going to work in the playoffs anyway. So I'd rather ratchet that up and, you know that, hey, we might get gashed here or there. And that wasn't Leslie Frazier's style. Leslie Frazier's style was kind of the boa constrictor, like, hey, let's keep it under control and then really ratchet down in the red zone. I'm actually probably looking forward to that change, not because that was bad, but because I think we saw the limits of how far that can go.
I want to ask about, because I know we still have three other teams to get through, but I want to group them together. Josh Allen and Ken Dorsey. Josh Allen, I didn't even know this. Maybe Bills fans know this and just don't care that he's led the NFL in turnovers the last 2 years. I guess when you factor in fumbles, not just whether or not they were fumbles lost, but whether
correct. That he, yeah, it actually is a little misleading, but yes, correct.
And so now you're talking about pass block concerns with a quarterback with a propensity to fumble. I'm not even saying he is. I'm just trying to decide or whatever. Because the Diggs thing, to me, where it's relevant is, at least from what I can tell, it seems like there's some angst towards Dorsey. And I remember we asked you about Dable last year, and you told us last year that Dable was kind of an up-and-down figure in Buffalo as well, that even though you guys did credit him for developing Josh Allen, there were highs and lows. But after what Dable did in New York, and by all accounts, like, got credited for doing a very good job with a limited offensive roster, and the offense without him was still good. So I'm not trying to act like Dorsey, like, flatlined. But does Diggs' somewhat, I guess, hesitation with the play calling maybe, or any of, like, the Dorsey after effect of the offense being bad in the playoffs, which it was, not just in that Bengals game, but in our game too. I even remember you and Aaron on your postgame show even said the defense played well despite allowing 31 points or 20.
Yeah, that was, so all the fluky stuff at the end of the half and everything, the weird stuff was not defensive lapses.
And like, Allen had three turnovers in that game. Mm-hmm. And then obviously in the Bengals game, the offense was a real problem. So is there anything there, or you just trust Josh so much?
Well, so the hardest part to unravel is prior to Josh Allen's UCL injury in week 9, the Bills had the best opening 8 games in NFL history. It's not an exaggeration. Statistically, that was the best offense in NFL history. Better than the 07 Patriots, better than the greatest show on turf. It was the statistically the best offense in NFL history. And then he hurt his UCL, and then things looked ugly. Now, I'm not naive enough to think that that's the only thing that changed. It's not. I do think that defenses got a second look at Ken Dorsey. I do think that there were some challenges in what was there. But I know it took a third of the playbook out. Josh had no control within 10 yards. He couldn't feather anything. Things that he was ripping people apart in the first 8 games of the year, he couldn't do. He could no longer do it. They only could go downfield 15 to 25 yards and 25 yards further. And it still worked. They still scored a bunch of points and did stuff, but it was just not nearly as much as what was there. So, you know, taking more risks, pushing things down the field, you're going to throw more interceptions. It's going to take more risks. He didn't have those turnovers in the first part of the year. So until I see that again and can see, okay, how much of this was Josh's elbow? How much of this was Dorsey? I don't know. I can tell you everything that I heard. I don't think Dorsey was any of Stephon Diggs' frustration. I think almost all of it was Josh Allen. I think almost all of it was one-on-one, him and Josh Allen. Josh had a very public breakup in the fall that went very poorly, including police being called to his house the night before the Bengals game because of his girlfriend, not because of him. Like, he, you know, because she needed to be removed from his house with the golf club she was swinging around his house. And then, so, you know, the scene where Diggs is yelling at Josh on the sideline in the playoff game, and you see it from behind. What he's yelling is, "What's your excuse now?" That was what he was yelling at him. So that's where the frustration was that I think Diggs thought Josh let himself get distracted off the field and wasn't focused on what he needed to be. And then that, you know, then you go and he's on every national campaign. He's on a ton of TV shows and golf events and the cover of Madden. There wasn't a lot of videos of like sweat dripping off his nose and Instagram workout videos. I think he kind of enjoyed it. And granted, part of that was rehabilitation and letting his elbow heal and stuff and everything like that. Like, he wasn't supposed to be doing some of those things. But I think part of it was questioning, like, hey, are we in this for the same thing? Are we in this doing the same thing? And, you know, I don't know where that falls and how that's going to work out, but I think that's where more of the frustration was. I'm curious in this second year what we see. I know they've wanted to introduce 12 personnel for a while. They tried with Tyler Kroft. They tried with Jacob Hollister. They tried with OJ Howard, and now they finally said, screw it. Here's a first-round pick. You can't mess this up. You have to play with two tight ends. So they've been trying to do that for a while, and now I think we're going to see something along those lines. But like I said, like I opened with, this is not a perfect team. This is not a perfect roster, but it's a damn good one.
One more thing I want to say, Dan, unless does Danny, you have any other questions? Or
No, I'm good on the Bills.
I just have one more thing to say, because reoccurring other Bills guest, Joe Miller, he's coined to me for the 3 years that he's been coming on here that it's wildest dreams land for Bills Mafia. When does that term eventually go away and you realize it's more about results and that it's just, instead of, hey, we're lucky to be here, and that this is just every, like, our dreams come true? Like, you know, when does it eventually just transition to where it's a shit or get off the pot scenario?
Good question. I was going to ask that.
So, I mean, there is a line, and I think, so some people will use Andy Reid in Philadelphia, where there was a long stretch of success, but not the ultimate success, 4 straight NFC championship games, a Super Bowl. But then they kind of forget how it actually ended. His last 2 seasons were 7-9 and 4-12, and then he got fired. So, you know, if the Bills keep winning the division and winning a playoff game and bumping their head and not being able to get through an AFC championship game or a division round, sure, there'll be frustration. But, you know, I have a hard time getting upset about watching 13 wins and a division championship and a playoff win and multiple playoff games. So it would need to fall below there. Now, if they have this much talent on the roster and they miss the playoffs, every question should be asked. If they miss the playoffs in any capacity with a healthy Josh Allen, every question should be asked. Eventually, will there become some kind of limit there? I think there would, but, you know, it's – I think there's an awful lot of teams who would love to win a division, to have – you know, it's only the Bills and the Chiefs. Three straight division championships, three straight double-digit win seasons, three straight seasons with a playoff win. There's only two teams in the NFL.
And also to be in a brand new stadium as well. And I didn't mean more or less, because I know last year I asked you about the hot seat question. I'm not going to do it because I know both being in McDermott got extensions in the offseason. It was just more from like a fan standpoint. When does it eventually look we need to be playing in late in February or playing in February for sense? That was more of it.
Entitled ungrateful assholes who are there already.
I just know it'd be good for the city, especially with both teams now on the rise.
And I think, before we get to the fence very quickly, I'll just say we can agree that in the moment, Greg, if there is another divisional round loss, it's understandable to, you know, react the emotional way.
Of course. Yeah, you know? Yes. That day, there'd be a lot of people calling for his job. In the grand scheme of things, you know, Bean and McDermott are the poster child for how to rebuild the franchise. Like, they are the absolute blueprint. This is how you tear it down. This is how you rebuild it. They are the best rebuild of a historically embarrassing franchise with the longest playoff drought in pro sports history to now, again, five straight double-digit win seasons, three straight division championships, three straight seasons with a playoff win. They are – that's as good as it can happen. So they haven't put the cherry on top yet, but it's – no matter what, I'm going to have a hell of an entertaining season, I promise. I'm going to have a great time.
They call him Big Baller Bean for a reason. All right, so moving on now. You know what? I'm going to rip the Band-Aid off. Instead of letting him go last, I'm going to let Danny go first on this one for Miami because we know this is going to get fun and spicy.
Miami? Oh, we're going Miami now.
We go Miami. We're going to go Miami and then New England and then the Jets.
I want to be as toxic as their fans are on Twitter. I really do.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because your fan bases are both very healthy.
No, you guys are extra horrible. I'll just say nicely, I'm not a believer in Miami. I think one of those good teams that have to miss the playoffs is one of them is going to be ending up to be Miami. I think a lot of teams figured out Tua, and you see that reflected in his December games and his stats and his four losses, who completely killed the momentum of Miami. I think Big Rat thinks that Vic Fangio is going to magically fix that defense, which was horrible last year, and they just lost Jalen Ramsey as well. So that's another thing. But obviously you have talent, bro. Obviously I think you're going to have a winning season. I just don't think that you guys get into the playoffs this year. I think that's the third place team in the AFC East.
I'm going to go with a quick one. To be short with mine, I'm going to go the same thing with Greg, and that's offensive line health, because we know for years that that's something Miami struggled with, but they brought in Teron Armstead. That's what we were saying before. If you can get a 17-game season out of him, it's great, but we know he was banged up in New Orleans. We know he's been banged up with Miami. Liam Eikenberg and Austin Jackson, I really want to see, can they take that next leap, especially in their third and fourth seasons? And then what will Connor Williams be at the center position? So I feel like they're also a big part, too, in keeping Tua healthy. So that's why I say, like, look, it's all about the big boys up front with them. And also, too, I will say this publicly on air because I retweeted it the other day, but if Christian Wilkins, for some reason, isn't signed by the Miami Dolphins, Bill Belichick will probably show up at his doorstep with a blank check.
He does love him. He does love him. So I said this pre-show when we were kind of warming up. If you tell me that Teron Armstead and Tua Tagovailoa play 17 games each, I think they're a coin flip for the division. I think that they are right there. This is an incredibly talented team. Anybody that you give Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill with a smart offensive coach, I'm not a Tua believer in the sense that I could put Tua on the Texans and he'd be the reason that they turn around and become an amazing franchise. I don't think you could put Tua on the Cardinals and all of a sudden he drags them to a division championship. But I also think he can be a point guard. And if you can be a point guard with a really good play caller and the guys catching the ball from you are two of the four fastest guys in the entire NFL, that's really scary and annoyingly scary. I think the defensive line is real. I am curious about the Jalen Ramsey thing. I think that Vic had some plans for Ramsey before that injury. So I'm really curious to see how that goes. And I think that's a little bit of a gap without what he was going to be, just because I'm not 100% sure what Xavien Howard still is and some of the different pieces there. So if you tell me everybody, if you give all four teams in the AFC East a guarantee of 100% health, everyone gets that, I think it matters the most for the Dolphins of any team. So far in their careers, that has not been a smart bet with Tua or with Terron Armstead. But I think we'll see where it goes. This defense has a ton of talent on there. Again, we've seen some of those in the past. They haven't always come together. If I'm going to make a bet, I would bet that Vic Fangio can make that work. It all is going to come down to health. I think they're going to be good. I think they're going to blow out some teams, but they got to be healthy when it matters. And I will say they got to make sure that that is not just a track team because they don't play indoors. There are going to be some tough outdoor games. It gets cold in Cincinnati, Kansas City, and Buffalo in January. Those are cold places to play. If they want to be real and not just fun, they're going to have that part along with it too. You can't just bring a track team to spots like that. But I think they're really talented, and I think that there's a chance they could be there. It's just going to come down to health.
Wow, that was so sweet. That was so kind. Even Danny saying that they're going to only go 9-8 is maybe his nicest preseason pick.
I like it.
You know,
like
I've been on the money with the Dolphins the last 2 years.
Okay, I will say he did say they would go under their 9.5 win total. Tua missed 5 games, and they did go under by half a game. But fine, fair enough. So
cash bet.
So I don't want to talk about. I won't make this as long as we did on the Bills because I think the health question is the main question, and I don't know how we answer that. Like, I think it is wrong in both directions to just act like we know with certainty that he's going to get hurt and miss 5 games versus like me as a fan confidently predicting that because of his added muscle in the offseason and the jujitsu classes that he's guaranteed going to play a full season.
He can fall so much better now.
He can fall better. You know, I do think the 10 pounds of muscle is real. Like, there's a reason Ryan Clark made that comment. If you see even the reporters who cover the team, you see Tua in person. He does physically look a lot different. He does look a lot stockier. That can go both ways, though. Like, it wouldn't surprise me 2 off seasons from now, the narrative flips. It's like, Tua actually dropped 15 pounds.
He's now doing the TB12 method and all about pliability.
He's lean and he's more athletic than he's ever been. Like, that narrative.
It's like part of the bloodline.
I will say, like, I didn't want to ask Greg about the backup quarterback stuff because I do kind of agree with him and Aaron on, like, you know, backup quarterbacks mostly suck everywhere. But I will say what is lost in the backup quarterback discussion, which is relevant for my team, obviously, is that it's not just about if the quarterback is out for the year. It's about what if the quarterback misses a stretch of 3 games. Tua in 2021 missed 4 games, and that is why they didn't make the playoffs that year. They were 9-8 that year. The Dolphins had 2 straight years with a winning record without making the playoffs in either year. Like, only happened one other time in NFL history. So, like, Greg talking about, like, the stats that he was throwing out, like, here's some stats. The Dolphins have had 3 straight winning seasons. One of them, admittedly, aided by the 17-game season. Not last year. The extra 17th game last year was the Niners game. So if you throw that game out, they would have just been 9-7 instead. So 3 straight winning seasons for the Dolphins, the only team in the NFL, besides the Chiefs and the Bills, to have 3 straight winning seasons in the NFL. If you think about it, not the Eagles, not the Rams, not the Niners. Go down the list. It's just those 3, not the Bengals. It's just those 3 teams. The health question, I can't answer it with Tua. We'll see. I do think that people forget that the first 2 years of his career, he finished the season fine. His injuries came earlier. His rookie year, he missed one game. He came in the middle of the season and missed one start. That was it. And it was like a random road game against the terrible Jets that Fitz played, and then he played the rest of the year. He had the bench aches, but he wasn't hurt. Like, only last year was, you know, the concussions were so high profile that, like, and it ended his season, and it was on Christmas Day when the last concussion happened. Yep. So, I can't predict it. I don't know.
And a quick caveat to my crazy rant I go on about backup quarterbacks. It does change by situation, by team.
Yes.
There are teams that when the roster is what's carrying the load, I do think it matters because, hey, they're the ones doing it. You just need to keep a steady flow of what's there. When it's, hey, we have to build everything around this singular quarterback, lying to ourselves that you can find a backup who has similar traits is just silly because nobody has similar traits to the guy. I've searched my entire life for this guy and his traits. I ain't going to find a second one that also has those traits.
That is very fair. And the backup quarterback situation for the Finns, I actually don't think is better. I've actually seen that a lot in the media.
I would have guessed that from afar that Mike White was an improvement.
Well, here's the thing. Like, Mike White has not had that good of a summer. There's some people locally here that want Skylar Thompson to keep the backup job. Now, Skylar was so bad in his last preseason game, in a game that Mike White didn't even play, that it is now speculated that Mike White will, in fact, still be the backup. His contract also probably stipulates that a little bit, although he didn't get as much money as initially was reported. He got a 2-year, $16 million deal, but I believe only $5 million of it is guaranteed. Like, if they're going to roster three quarterbacks anyways, because they're not going to just cut Skylar Thompson. I don't think. Maybe this thing will come out tomorrow and make me look stupid. I'd be very surprised. So, like, because of that reason, like, whether Mike White is the second or third string matters a little bit less because it's not going to result in him being off the team. So most people, I think, would think Mike White is the better backup. I think, like, talking to a lot of Jets fans, and Danny knows this very well, like that famous Bengals game he had in 2021. One good Jets fan I know who lives in Miami, actually, he said the book on White is that he has durability issues himself. And that very first time you see him, he actually might be pretty good. It might provide a spark and be very helpful. But when his injuries start piling and piling and piling, like, he finished the last few seasons hurt too. And he wasn't even the starter. That was like in a 3-game sample each year. And if you know anything about the Dolphins, the one thing you can't have is a backup quarterback who's also not healthy. And see, I disagree with people who say that on paper this is better than Teddy Bridgewater. It is not. It is in reality maybe because Teddy was not durable and could not finish any of the games he played in. And I don't buy that, like, if you guaranteed me full health for Teddy and Mike White, that this would be clearly an upgrade. I think at best it's probably the same. I'm not too convinced either way. That where the argument does have some merit is that Skylar Thompson, like, he ultimately was a rookie last year. Like, I feel like that's lost in the conversation of him as a backup. That was his rookie season as a seventh-round pick. Not everyone could be Brock Purdy. This shit's hard. Like, it's possible for him to be better in successive years than he was his rookie season. But we'll see. I don't want to talk about, like I said, didn't want to talk about health. I do think the Fangio thing is interesting because I actually do think that's being a little overrated nationally. I think there's a lot of people that think Fangio is automatically going to make, there's levels to this, right? Like, making the defense better than last year, sure. The defense last year was terrible. There's a lot of people in Miami that think that if Tua didn't get hurt, that they would have beaten the Bills in the playoffs, that they could have done something in the AFC, etc. I think beating the Bills with a healthy Tua is definitely on the table. I think that team making a Super Bowl run with that defense was not going to happen. Like, that defense was not going to hold up in Cincinnati, in Kansas City, against Philly. It just was not. It was terrible on the road the entire season. So don't buy that for a second, that there was, like, some magical run that we were robbed of. I don't believe so. I do think that Fangio can make the defense better. I do think one problem, though, that is being underrated nationally is that a lot of the guys in the prior scheme play very differently than what Fangio was going to ask of them. In the last scheme, we almost never played with two deep safeties, very rarely. One thing I would always say on this podcast, Brandon Jones and Javon Holland are the best blitzing safety duos in the league. And that may be true. I don't think they're going to blitz nearly as much in this new scheme, by all accounts. Brandon Jones, most people probably don't know this, is probably not going to be the starter on this team. Because what's going to be asked in the prior scheme, he primarily played at the line of scrimmage. Hell of a tackler, hell of a blitzer. Rocked Josh Allen in that game in Miami. And so did Javon Holland in that game too. Like, there's a lot of great plays they can make that I don't think in this new scheme they're going to be asked to make anymore. From what everything we've seen in camp, the Dolphins are going to play with five defensive linemen on the line. It's that 3-4 thing where three defensive linemen, four linebackers, but the two outside linebackers are on the line of scrimmage the entire game and are a de facto defensive ends. Like, that's kind of going to be what it is, like with Bradley Chubb, Jalen Phillips, Christian Wilkins, Zach Sealer, and then some rotating door of Raekwon Davis, Emmanuel Ogba, some of the backups that we have that are good, et cetera. So I don't think the safeties are going to have nearly as much action as blitzers as Brian Flores and Josh Boyer were having them doing. And there's carryover to that. Now it's kind of like, instead of thinking you're set at two safety spots, now you don't really know who the second safety is going to be. It's probably going to be Deshaun Elliott. Is he going to be any good? I can't tell you. I have no idea. Vic Fangio apparently wants Javon Holland to play slot corner more often and have Deshaun Elliott or whoever the other safety is be the deep center fielder. And it's like, okay, well, now Javon Holland's doing something completely different than what he'd been doing the last 2 years in Miami, where he was either the primary center fielder or a straight blitzer at the quarterback, and very rarely anything in between. Now you're asking him to play slot corner on some snaps, which, by the way, now that Jalen Ramsey's hurt, might be even more likely. Like, I don't know how that's going to go. So I do agree that Fangio is a illustrious defensive genius for a reason. The defense will probably be better. It will probably be even good. But I see a lot of people saying this could be one of the five best defenses in the NFL. And I just don't know if you can go from last year to this year that quickly with some of the kind of awkward roster fits. Like Emmanuel Ogba was one of the Dolphins' best defenders for the last 3 years before getting hurt last year. And right now he's a backup player. He makes $15 million a year. He's not going to start. He plays deep into the preseason games. If by the time this podcast comes out, he's traded to another team tomorrow, it would not surprise me. Now, I guess it would, but it would only in the sense of it'd be hard to trade that contract. Nothing to do with like his value on this team or whatever. He's a backup. He's a rotational defensive end. So I think some of those roster holdovers might make the defense better, but going from a terrible road defense to a great road defense, I think is unlikely. So while I think the defense has a lot of upside, I'd personally be a little surprised if they finish top five, top seven at the end of the year. I'm hoping for like a fringe top 10 defense, and I'll take that for what I can get it. And then the offensive side of the ball, I think what's lost in the Tua faded down the stretch thing is very simple. Danny pointed it out. Everyone points it out. Oh, the Niners exposed him. The Chargers exposed him. Bills. And then the Packers exposed him. He's got his concussion. That Bills game was one of the Dolphins' best performances of the season. Yes, it resulted in a loss. Winning at Buffalo is fucking hard. Show me other teams that can do that. Like, that was one – they came within a hair of sweeping them. And I'm not doing it for moral victories, Greg. I'm just saying that was one of their best performances of the season. But because it was sandwiched in between three other losses, it's just included as part of the period of the season where they were exposed, part of their downturn. They played really well offensively that game. That was one of – that was Tua's best game at Buffalo by a mile. Probably Tua's best game against Buffalo, period, his whole career. So they were clearly not exposed if they had their best offensive performances of the year in a game that they were 7-point underdogs in Buffalo on Saturday night, and they lost by a last-second field goal. Like, sorry, that was not part of the downturn of them being exposed or anything like that. That was one of their better performances. Now, yes, against the Packers the next week, did Tua crash back to earth with three interceptions? Yes. How much of that was the mid-game concussion he suffered? I don't know. I'm not going to try to predict it. I can see either way. I can see how the concussions caused it. I can see how he just had a bad day. I don't know. I'm not going to try to predict it. I'm just saying the narrative that then after the Niners game, the offense just sucked is not true. And it's very often repeated constantly when people cite that losing streak, ignoring that one of the games that was a loss was actually a great showing. So the pieces don't quite kind of line up that way. Where I will give Danny credit on this, though, is that I do think the passing game will regress a little bit. Losing Trent Sherfield, I do think matters. To build off Greg's point from earlier, he was very valuable. He was played more snaps than Cedric Wilson did. He does a lot of different things as a blocker and as a receiver. He was a really good outlet for Tua. Knew the playbook really well. I do think losing him is significant because now they're going to rely on Braxton Berrios, Robbie Chosen, or the aforementioned Cedric Wilson to be their third receiving option. And they don't have Mike Gesicki anymore either. So I do think the passing game, and it should regress. Like, is Tua going to throw for 9 yards an attempt again? No, like that's probably not something that's sticky year to year, despite having Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. So I do think the passing game will probably go from one of the best in football to Randy, who I know our loyal listener who likes to hear the DVOA stats. They were fourth in passing DVOA last year. Fourth. That's with Tua missing four games. They were third in the NFL in yards per play. Let me repeat that. The Dolphins offense was third in the NFL in yards per play, only behind KC and Buffalo. Again, another stat where it's Chiefs, Bills, Dolphins. So third in yards per play, fourth in passing DVOA, with Tua missing four games. That's including the Teddy Bridgewater and Skylar Thompson data. So I do think the passing game will regress. The running game could improve. And I think that's what's most lost about this offense. I think people assume because of Mike McDaniel and the San Francisco system, this was some high-level running game. It was not. It was 16 in rushing TVOA last year. In ESPN's metrics, it was fringe top 20. Raheem Mostert's good. Didn't play every game. Him not being in that Bills playoff game was a big fucking deal because he ran all over Buffalo in the second game and was not the running game was terrible in that wild card game. So him not being there mattered a lot. So he's good, but he's also not durable. To add on to the Tua and Taron Armstead questions, I think that whether the Taylor news breaks or not, don't want to get into it because it might not even happen. So it's still stupid to spend 2 minutes on it. But I do think that with Raheem Mostert, with Jeff Wilson being here the full season, with Devon Achane, who I like a lot, and I think in general with the offensive line getting a second year in the system, because everyone remembers the quarterbacks in the second year of a system can improve. I think it's a lot of the offensive linemen have said this. The run schemes were very complicated for them to understand. And I think giving them a second year in the system, all of them, I think is helpful for them too. And I think this running game, if I had to predict, will not be 16th in DVOA next year. They're running the ball constantly. They got rid of Gasecki. Their tight end room is horrible. I mean, there's no other way to say it. I'm not exaggerating when I say all three of you guys have two tight ends better than every tight end on the Dolphins roster. Like, we already talked about Greg's. Like, Hunter Henry and Mike Gesicki and what's his freaking name? Tyler Conklin
and
CJ Uzomah.
Yeah.
CJ Uzomah is a better tight end than Durham Smythe. Like, truly, all you have six tight ends in this call that are better.
Smythe might be the best blocker out of the seven of them.
That's kind of the whole point.
Hunter Henry's not a good blocker.
Yeah. Well, and this is again why like not having Sherfield matters. It's like there's no tight end that you're going to throw like 400 receiving yards worth of passes to.
Yeah.
So you need Braxton Berrios to be damn good. You need Robbie Chosen to be damn
good. I would say there's going to be some sneaky plays where they don't realize that the two pass receivers on the field are going to be Dawson Knox and Trent Sherfield. They're going to road grade somebody and not going to realize what's coming.
They're going to completely pull it off by it because Sherfield, at least for us, one of the better blockers in the league. So
yeah. I think PFF had him as the number one blocking receiver in the league last year.
And he knew, and look, and like this goes back to the knowing the system thing. That's where like him being having San Francisco familiarity mattered. And that's why I think that matters for the other guys on this offense too, not just Tua, for understanding the schemes of it all a little bit better. I know I've gone on for a while here, but not that this stat means anything, but they did rush for their most yards in the preseason in 30 years. 30 years? And they intentionally got rid of their pass-catching tight end? They're going to run the ball a lot more than people think. I think they're going to take advantage of the space that Reek and Waddle afford them. And I think the big play explosiveness, to Greg's point, the track meet stuff, going to go down a little bit. And I think the running efficiency is going to go way up. So I still think the offense can be good if Tua is healthy. But I think it'll be more balanced than it is currently being given credit for. So that's my diatribe on the offense and the defense.
All righty. So who wants to say something about my boys that doesn't involve the obviously Captain Obvious of weaknesses or something to prove?
How about this? I think the Patriots are going to be better than all three of our other fan bases want to admit. And I mean this sincerely, not like taking a jab or trying to twist the knife. I think they're going to be better than all three of our fan bases think, and I don't think it's actually going to matter. Like, I don't think they're going to be so much better that it's going to be, oh, shit, I can't believe they took the division. I think a lot of our fans in New York, Miami, and Buffalo think this is going to be some, like, woebegone trash last place team. I do think they'll finish fourth. And might also have a winning record and might also be pushing for a wild card spot. I don't know how special Mac Jones is, and I don't think there are any special weapons for him to pass to. I think Ramondre Stevenson is really, really good. And I think with the run game and the defense and special teams, Bill Belichick has done magical things in the past. I don't think Mac Jones is going to be good enough, especially with I think Mac Jones with explosive special talent. This is feeding into the other one. If you switched Mac Jones and Tua, I don't know how much changes between the two teams. I think Tua is a little better. I don't know that much changes between the two teams. If you gave Mac Jones, McDaniel and those receivers, I think he'd put up some really nice numbers. Like, I think he would do okay. He didn't have them. You ain't got that in New England, and I just don't think there's enough to keep up with the rest of them. So I think they're better than people want to admit. I just don't think it's going to be enough better to matter.
Yeah, no, I agree. The defense is always going to be up there. We all know what Belichick does on the defensive side of the ball. They're going to win games just on that purely alone. They score off of turnovers as well. Probably is better than anyone in the league. But like he said, man, it's just like there's no firepower there. There's no one that scares you that you really have to game plan for. And I also think bringing in Ezekiel Elliott hurts Ramondre. I thought Ramondre was ready to take off this year. And now, you know, he's going to be losing snaps to Zeke, who does not look good, in my opinion, you know. But we'll see.
Buy the dip. If you're in fantasy, buy the dip. If people are doubting Ramondre Stevenson because of Zeke, scoop all that up.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant Zeke. I mean, could they have a winning record? I don't see it, but, you know, crazier things have happened. But Griff knows me. I'm going to root against the Patriots all day long. I hate them with all of my heart. They've tortured me enough. So finally, you know, let's see them at the end of the barrel.
They could kind of be like the Steelers last year, where, like, it at times looks ugly, but they kind of grift their way to a 9-8 season. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at all. I don't think people realize how bad that 2020 roster was offensively. Like, it wasn't just Cam at that point in his career. His best receivers were like Gunnar Olszewski and N'Keal Harry. It was like ugly. And they went 7-9. They went 7-9 with that team. So, like, you know, I think that the thing is, I think we're all kind of saying the same thing. They have a high floor. They'll beat up on bad quarterbacks.
So I'm going to tell you this. Their last six games are murder. Yeah. Chargers, Steelers, Chiefs, Broncos, Bills, Jets. I don't think they're going to win enough of those to get themselves in, but I promise they're going to mess up somebody else's season.
Yeah.
They are absolutely going to ruin somebody else's season in a game that somebody's counting as a win right now, and they're not going to win.
They will be a good against the spread team this year, Griff.
Oh, yeah.
I like them against Philly.
Listen, like, we haven't beat them in since when, Griff? 2015?
December 27th of 2015.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yep.
Okay. So I want to jump on the Zeke thing. I don't think that's going to take carries from Ramondre. It's just because the depth chart behind him was Kevin Harris, who still is a work in progress. He's not ready yet. Obviously, Pierre Strong was shipped off to Cleveland yesterday because, look, the tackle position scares me. I'm confident in David Andrews, Michael Wenu, and Cole Strange. I know Cole Strange, the pick was scrutinized a lot, but Cole Strange had a great rookie season. Because him and David Andrews together made for a hell of a center guard duel. The couple games where David Andrews was out without a concussion.
Him not deserving to be a first-round pick was not his problem. No. He also wasn't a UDFA. He was going to be a round three pick. It's not like he was going to be like some seventh-round guy. It was a little bit of a reach, but he's a good player.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not how you're saying, like, you know, hey, he's a top five guard in the league. No. He's not like a Joel Bitonio or Joe Tooney, for example. No, I'm not out here saying that. I'm out here just saying, like, look, that he's basically made his worth. But it's the right tackle position because we don't know if it's going to be – there's Connor McDermott, there's Riley Reiff. They've obviously done a couple of trades yesterday, like I was saying, with Cleveland, with Minnesota. So I ultimately think that Zeke's brought in just because they know Ramondre's not that power guy. Ramondre is that long yardage guy slash pass catcher out of the backfield. So Zeke's going to be brought in for, like, you know, those – it's like within 3 yards of a first down situation. I think that's where Zeke's going to mainly play. I do like the double dip for fantasy personally. When it comes to wide receiver, like, I know what we got. I'm just trying to look and see, like, can those guys go further than they were last year? I think you will see a bounce back from Kendrick Bourne just because, look, Matt Patricia hated him. I don't know why. It is what it is. But in all honesty, this team – like, some people have told me, like, this team's going to be bad. Like, I've heard 5-12 bad. I don't think so. My honest opinion, their floor is 7. 7-10 is, I think, worst-case scenario for them. Similar season to last year. But the big thing for them last year is they blew a lot of games that they could have had. Like, they could have beaten the Packers, even with Bailey Zappe, who, that's another story. He's not QB2. I think Malik Cunningham's going to be quarterback, too.
Griff, did you catch the Raiders game that they played?
Yes, I did. Yes,
oh,
I
you
did.
Saw that. Okay.
Oh, no. I'm not talking about the Raiders game just because, like, that they shot themselves in the foot. But I'm talking about, like, the Packer game, the Vikings game on Thanksgiving that they could have won.
Yeah.
And then even that last Bills game in the regular season, I think they had it up until they kicked a field goal. And then what happened on the very next play? Naheem Hines ran it back to the house. So as soon as that second return touchdown happened, I knew it was curtains for the Patriots season. They basically took advantage of a lot of bad situations. Obviously, look, they bullied Sam Ehlinger for 60 minutes in that Colts game. the game I was at, they whooped the Lions 29-0. There was the god-awful Jets game that Marcus Jones had a punt return on.
Oh, God.
And then there was the unfortunate Arizona Cardinal game, which that game looks now to be like the demise of that franchise where Kyler tore his ACL very early on. I'm not saying like that's the reason they won. I'm just saying when he got out, they basically took advantage of the situation and ran away with the game. Basically, the point I wanted to get to with the stealing games, they didn't do that last year. If they want to be successful and I think contend for a playoff spot, they got to beat a couple teams. Because even like, you know, you said their last six games, their first five games are not easy either. It's Philadelphia, Miami on Sunday Night Football, the Jets week three, Dallas Cowboys week four, and then there's that Saints game week five. And then they have Buffalo week seven and then Miami week eight, and then they play the Commanders and then they go to Germany and play the Colts. So we'll see what happens. But they basically have to get enough wins early on because I don't know if you guys have remember this, but the last 2 years they've started 1-3. I think they have to go into that week five Saints game if they want a chance to compete. 2-2, I think, is their worst case scenario. 1-3 could very likely happen. I just don't see a world, though, like where Big Rat was saying, where this team is historically bad. I feel like there's going to be some times where it looks bad, but I feel like I think they're capable of sneaking in a couple wins. But in reality, I still feel like 8-9 or 9-8 is probably where they're going to end up. I think if all goes well, 10's a possibility, but it's a very far out possibility. And this is a team, too, that's going to be predicated on defense, obviously. Like, look, Matthew Judon, Dietrich Wise Jr., excuse me, and a couple players don't get talked about enough, but Josh Uche last year balled out in his third year. And Christian Barmore, too, the nose tackle from defensive tackle from Alabama. He had a great second year. The linebacking core is a little bit of a puzzle, but we'll figure it out. But ultimately, they have a really good secondary that I feel like you're going to see guys like Kyle Duggar continue to improve, Adrian Phillips. Devin McCourty's loss is huge, but they did get Matthew Slater back for, I believe, his 18th season, which I know there's a talk about like him and Steve Tasker are the same things, but I still feel like how you guys feel about Tasker is how I feel about Slater. Matthew Slater is a Hall of Famer. I guarantee he'll be in Canton one day. But basically, I still feel like New England it's like Cleveland or Los Angeles in the sense of they are going to be their own worst enemy. Like you saw it last year, how a lot of those mental mistakes are what cost them. Case in point, Vegas, where, look, I don't know what happened. It just all shut down and it went belly up. Another good example of that was the Bears game, which I know everyone was saying was, oh, Mac was bad. I still believe in my heart of hearts Mac should never have played in that game, and that was just a bad game all in all. Like, do you remember 2021, Greg, you guys lost to Jacksonville? It was the same sort of thing, where it's just nothing was compete, nothing was good. Defense was shit.
6 points.
Offense was shit. Special teams was crap. So it's just like a shit on crap on shit sandwich. So that's what happened to them there. But ultimately, I still feel like this can be a competitive football team. It's just how far can they go? It's ultimately up to them. And like I said, and like you were saying too, that murderer's role going into Christmas after Thanksgiving.
And I got to say, that tough. Those opening four games of Eagles, Dolphins, Jets, Cowboys is
not easy.
Is not easy. Like, we're going to know. We're going to know going into that Saints game in week five. We're going to know what kind of season this is going to be.
Yeah, we'll definitely know by week five, or even because I feel like the Saints game for them can be winnable, and then week six against Vegas, they should hope to God win.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.